Greetings in the name of our Lord Jesus and welcome. You may turn in your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 21. I like to read verse 21 as a springboard for the subject this morning. I had to wonder this morning if Brother Abe and Sister Florence are listening in. I think they can hear us this morning. They certainly have gone the last mile of the way. Proverbs 21, verse 21. He that followeth after righteousness and mercy findeth life, righteousness, and honor. The title for this morning is Choices That Lead to Honor. I'd like to make just a few observations from this verse. This word followeth here means to run after, to chase, to hunt, to put to flight, usually with hostile intent. That was in parentheses. Followeth, after. And therefore we understand that to receive this great reward of honor, it means that we need to make some good choices. We follow after two things and we get three things, it says. Of course, we all know that it's easy to make selfish choices in life, but we notice the energy invested in making good choices. We also see here that we are rewarded with what we run after. If we run after righteousness and mercy, then we find life, righteousness, and honor. And so the implications are that what happens, or I'll ask it in a question, what happens when you don't seek after these things? And I guess it implies that we don't receive life, righteousness, and honor. And I trust this morning that all of us have a desire to be rewarded with honor, choices that lead to honor. Just a little bit of a background. I compiled my notes from a current study at Shepherd's Fold on a booklet called Integrity. And the booklet surrounds the life of Joseph and teaches how he victoriously withstood the pressures and the temptations that he was faced with and came out integral. And so I got the inspiration to bring a message as a reflector of the booklet. I would like to look at the life of Joseph. So the message goal this morning is to see how Joseph's choices had a direct impact in leading him to a life of honor. And the message will start with an overview of the hardships in Joseph's life, and it ends with his promotion. We will notice how Joseph's choices, coupled with God's leading, brought him from slavery to the savior of many people. And I guess there's two things I'd like to mention with this. You know, as I think of the message goal, I believe it should encourage us to take personal responsibility for our choices rather than totally feeling victimized by our past influences. And this is not only just, we don't make these choices just because of what we get out of it. We don't just make these choices because of what we receive. That's not the primary reason. The primary reason is that the glory, that God can receive glory from the testimony of our lives and the lives around us that are blessed by our life and our choices to serve God. And the other challenge that I'd like to think about regarding the message is the challenge for us to reject the doctrine of Calvinism, emphasizing the omnipotence of God. In other words, Joseph was destined to be the ruler, and so the choices that he made had little or no impact to where he came out at. And I believe we need to be aware of that teaching the teaching that our choices have little or no effect on the responsibilities and the rewards that we receive, especially as we think of it from an eternal perspective. I believe our choices affect our usefulness to God and to others. And although we're not promised a life of ultimate honor here in this world, if we are faithful, we can look forward to the time when Christ will be glorified and admired with us or in his saints at his coming. And I believe that will be the greatest honor that we can receive, and we find that in the book of Thessalonians. So follow me with me through the book of Genesis. I like now to turn to Genesis chapter 12. I'm going to be hitting verses here and there as we go through the book of Genesis. I tried to lay it out in a way that you could easily follow. Most of it's in order, so we can just flip a page or two and be there at the verses that I want. First of all, I like to consider the negative generational influences that were a part of Joseph's experience or prior to his day. And we read in Genesis chapter 12 and verse 13 here, we see that Abraham, which is a great grandfather of Joseph, tells half of an untruth. We see in Genesis 12, verse 13, he said to his wife, "Say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with thee for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee." And he was telling his wife to tell this other party that he was his sister, which was half of an untruth, and we're not going to go into that. I just want you to understand the negative influence here. Turn with me a few chapters back to Genesis chapter 20 and verse 2. Here we have a similar thing happening. Genesis chapter 20 and verse 2. "And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gergar, sent and took Sarah." So we notice here that he told another half-truth, and we notice that his dishonesty is starting to become a pattern. Okay, we see a pattern here happening. All right, let's move back a few chapters to Genesis chapter 26 and verse 7. Here Isaac tells the men of Gergar an untruth. This is Abraham's son. Abraham 26 and verse 7. "And the men of the place asked him of his wife, and he said, she is my sister. For he feared to say, she is my wife, lest, said he, the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon." And so we notice that the failure repeated in the following generation. It was no longer a half untruth, but it was a total untruth. All right, let's move over to chapter 27. Here we move into the story of Jacob receiving the blessing from his father in verse 12. 27 and 12, "My father preadventure..." Okay, let me give you a little background. We have here Rebekah directing Jacob to deceive. We have Rebekah directing Jacob to deceive her husband. So we see that in verse 12, verse 27 and verse 12. "My father preadventure will feel me." This is Jacob talking. "And I shall seem to him as a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing. And his mother said unto him, Upon me be thy curse, my son. Only obey my voice and go fetch me them." And so we have here deception coming into the place. This is Jacob's mother now. And we also notice that in verse 19, we see that Jacob now deceives his father. He listened to his mother. In verse 19, and Jacob said unto his father, I am Esau thy firstborn. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me. And so here we have Rebekah was Joseph's grandmother, and Jacob was Joseph's father. And we notice the failure repeated from generation to generation. We see the influence. All right, let's flip back. I'm actually going to flip back a little bit here to Genesis chapter 25. And here we have Jacob cunningly stealing the birthright from Esau in verse 29. I suppose I'll read verses 29 through 34. And Jacob sowed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with the same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. And Esau said, behold, I am at the point to die, and what profit shall this birthright do to me? And Jacob said, swear to me this day, and he sware unto him. And he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. And so we have here, Esau is Joseph's uncle. We notice the negative influences in the family. Now, I didn't mention this. My focus is Joseph. But if the other thing that you can watch for is how the people that made bad choices in life, how they received dishonor in their life. And you can think through that yourself as we go through that. I'm not going to take the time to look at that. All right, let's look at another negative influence. Let's go back to chapter 28. Verse 20 through 22, I take this as negative because here Jacob is making a bargain with God. After putting himself at risk with Esau, Genesis chapter 28 and verse 20, and Jacob vowed a vow saying, if God will be with me and he will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. And what I don't like about this is the bargain he made with God. It was a good, it's good that he wanted to serve God, but it was on a condition. Okay, so let's move on to Genesis chapter 29, the next chapter. And verse 25, we see here Jacob was given two wives because of his uncle's shrewd dealings. I'll read 25 through 28. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. He was supposed to get the other girl. And he said to Laban, what is it this that thou hast done unto me? Did I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then thou hast beguiled me? Then hast thou beguiled me. And Laban said, it must not be so. Done in this country, in our country, to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. And Jacob did so, and fulfilled her week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. And so here we have a family situation where a man has two wives, and he's going to raise children in this home situation. Well, let's see how that turned out. Let's go down just a few verses to chapter 30. And verse 1, we see here the rivalry of Jacob's wife competing for Jacob's greatest affection. And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her children and said unto Jacob, give me children or else I die. And we notice that Jacob's anger was kindled. Okay, negative generational influences. Let's move on to the next chapter. Genesis 31, we have here the story of Jacob growing tired of his uncle Laban's selfishness. And so it seems like Jacob takes advantage of his uncle in relating to gaining cattle, although it is very clear that God was working for Jacob. Just a little bit of an insight on Jacob's life. Well, then on verse 20, we see that Jacob gets fed up with life, with being there at Laban. And so in verse 20, he decides to run off. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Assyrian, in that he told him not that he fled. But again, here God had asked Jacob to return to his homeland, but maybe there could have been a better way to do it. And then I'm back up into verse 19. Here we see that Rachel steals the images of her father. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. So here we have another negative influence that is in the family. Well, we see in verse 32 that she kept this hidden from her husband. And in verse 35, we see Rachel's manipulation to keep the truth from her father when he came to search for the images. Verse 32, with whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. And then verse 35, we see, and she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but he found not the images. So we see all these negative influences that were a forerunner of Joseph's life. Now let's go back to Genesis chapter 34. And here we have in the first few verses, we have Jacob's daughter that was raped, and Jacob seemed to take a passive approach to this. I don't think we're going to read these verses. While later on in the chapter, his sons took a deceptive, harsh approach to bring justice. Well, in verse 5, it says, and Jacob held his peace until they were come, speaking of his sons. Okay, now we'd like to look a little bit at the family or home influences or the circumstances. This is getting closer to Joseph's time in life. In Genesis chapter 35 and verse 19, we have Rachel dying, leaving Joseph without his mother at a young age. Verse 19 of 35, and Rachel died and was buried. All right, now let's move over to Genesis chapter 37 and verse 2. We see here that Joseph was exposed to the sin of his brothers. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with his sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. And so we have exposure there to sin. We also see in verse 3, following that, we see favoritism. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. All right, let's notice his brother's rejection. In verse 4, and when his brethren saw his father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Well, what did this result into? Verse 8, we notice that they resisted Joseph reigning over them, and his brethren said unto him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. So we have here a resistance to what might come to pass in the future in regards to a dream, and his brothers hated him on top of that. Well, in verse 11, we see that his brothers envied him. We also notice in verse 24 of chapter 37 that his brothers cast him into a pit. And they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And finally, in verse 18, we noticed Well, I'm going back here a little bit. I believe I must have the wrong verse, but maybe it's 28. And there passed by Midianites, merchant men, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph unto Egypt. And so finally we have his brothers getting to the point where they wanted to kill him, and they sold him to the Ishmaelites. Put yourself in those shoes, okay? We're looking at the negativity of his influences here in his life. All right, let's look at a few of his negative influences during his slavery. We see in chapter 37 and verse 36, the Ishmaelites sold Joseph to Potiphar, so he was sold, and then he was resold. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, unto an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. All right, then let's move back to chapter 39, and I'd like to read verse 7. Here we have Potiphar's wife pressing Joseph to have a sexual relationship with her. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph and said, "Lie with me." I'll let that for now. We'll come back later. Genesis chapter 39 and verse 17, we notice that Potiphar's wife accuses Joseph falsely. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, "The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me." And then finally in verse 20, Joseph's master took him and threw him into prison for maintaining his purity and for the accusation his wife had made. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in prison. Well, let's move down to chapter 40. Chapter 40 and verse 14. Here we have where Joseph interpreted dreams without immediate results. "And think on me when it shall be well with thee." This is in regards to the baker and the butler. "And show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house." And in verse 23, it says, "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him." So Joseph did a good deed here, and they just forgot about him. Now, if this was your story, how would you have responded to the situations that Joseph faced? This is a negative picture of it. Okay, and I know we just took a very brief look at this, but it's the negative influences, the circumstances that surrounded, the rejection, the slavery that he was put under, the hatred of his brothers, and those things that we looked at. Well, we want to look at Joseph's character and see the honor coming out. But with that, remember the negative background that we just looked at. So now we're going to turn back again and we're going to repeat some of these chapters in verse. Let's go back to Genesis 37. I'm not going to go into a lot of thoughts about some of the previous people, such as Abraham. He was considered a friend of God. Isaac was a peacemaker. And so they also had their good influences. But I'd like to start here in Joseph's time in life. Genesis chapter 37 and verse 2 and 3. I like to read them. Actually, I did read them, I believe. But I'm going to read them. Actually, I'll just pick out here in verse 2. We see here that Joseph was feeding the flock, and this could imply to us that he had responsibility. We also notice that he brought an evil report to his father. And so we see that there was a relationship. There was honest communication. This is starting on the positive of Joseph's life. And we notice here that it says that Israel loved Joseph more than all his children. And part of this was because he was a son of his old age. But I'd like to say that another reason, or part of this reason, was because of Joseph's faithfulness. You know, it's easier to love someone who's submissive, who's kind, who takes responsibility in life. Think about that a little bit. Someone who's just rebellious and it's hard to deal with, they tend to just get on our nerves, if I can say it like that. But here we have a young man who was filled with character, and I think this helped his father love him. All right, we also see here in Genesis chapter 37 and verse 5, we notice at God's directive, Joseph dreamed a dream. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And we see here that God had a plan for Joseph, and although his father rebuked him in verse 10, I believe it was, it says, and he told the dream to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? That's not where he... Okay, somewhere he rebuked him. I'm not seeing the verse. Okay, it's the next. Maybe I did read that. And his father rebuked him. It may be in there. And then in verse 11, it says, but his father observed the saying. Now, why do you think his father observed the saying? Why didn't he take it as a joke? I believe the fact that his father could not shake that dream and its meaning is a reflection of Joseph's character. If Joseph had been a careless, dishonest person, his father would have more easily dismissed his words as a joke. But because of his character, I believe his dad had a hard time letting go of that. He observed the saying because he wondered what it meant. All right, then we're going to move down. We see Jacob's sons were feeding the cattle, and he sent Joseph to find out their well-being. They were close to where Jacob's son had slaughtered the men of the city for Dinah's rape. And possibly Joseph had a fear of revenge, but we read here in verse 13, we see his father communicating with Joseph. And Israel said unto Joseph, this is chapter 37, verse 13, and Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send thee unto them. And he said unto him, here I am. And so I notice here that we have trust. I will send. It appears that his father trusted him. Joseph was faithful in his previous responsibilities, so his father had the confidence that he could send him. He says, I'm going to do it. I will send him. We also see that he responds with respect and dependence. Here I am. Here I am. Joseph had learned to answer when his parents called. His availability and his willingness to drop his activities for his father was a reflection of the importance of his father's business. And we understand that it's important to teach our children when we call, say, answer us. Here I am, respect and dependence. So we see the character of Joseph. We also see in verse 14 that he obeyed him, and he said unto him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. There's no mention made here that his father had to try to persuade him to obey or did some type of bargaining. No, it was expected that he would obey his father. His father sent him. He said, here I am. And he went with simple obedience. We notice the character. Notice the choices that Joseph is making and how that's going to affect his life. All right, Genesis 37. Let's go down to 15 through 17. We see here perseverance. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. Now, I think this was about 40 miles to Shechem. Okay, so he traveled about 40 miles, I'm going to say approximately. I believe so. And he couldn't find him, and so he travels another 20 miles, okay? And he wasn't getting in a car. So we notice his perseverance. And so we see here that Joseph was a focused young man who was not distracted by the circumstances that could have discouraged or sidetracked him from finding his brothers. Well, moving on, just briefly, we see that Joseph eventually found his brothers, but because of their envy and because of their anger towards Joseph, they decided that they're going to kill him before he ever got to them. And we have Reuben sticking up for him. And because of the circumstances, he was stuck into a pit, and then he was sold to merchants going toward Egypt. And we have Joseph's brother concealing their actions by taking Joseph's coat, dipping it into blood to deceive their father into thinking that a wild animal had devoured him. And meanwhile, we have Joseph starting a new life in Egypt, being sold to Potiphar as a slave. Well, let's see how Joseph responded to that. So let's go to chapter 39. Chapter 39 and verse 4. We have here Joseph serving his master. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And so we notice here that Joseph accepted his lot in life, or he couldn't have served him so cheerfully. But notice the honor that is starting to come out of his life. He found grace in his sight, and he made him overseer of all his house. Okay? He was given a lot of responsibility there. All right, let's move down to verses 7 through 9. We have the verses here where Potiphar's wife was trying to get Joseph to have a sexual relationship with her. I believe we'll read verses 7 through 9. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused, and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wondeth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And so we see here that Joseph, we resisted this temptation, to which the master's wife went to her husband in anger and accused Joseph of what she was guilty of. And guess what happened? Joseph had another negative thing happen. The husband threw Joseph into prison. But in verse 21, what do we see? But the Lord was with Joseph, and showed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. We see the honor coming through. And then in verse 23a, we see the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand. Actually, let's read it all. Because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. See the honor that was coming through out of his life. Well, let's go to chapter 40. And to verse 8, we see here that Joseph was in prison, but God helps Joseph interpret dreams of his fellow prisoners. Verse 8, and they said unto him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me then, I pray you." And what happened? Okay, and Joseph said unto him, "This is the interpretation of it." So Joseph was able to interpret the dream. And then in verse 22b, we see that the interpretation came true. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. And so we notice that Joseph's dream came true. And we see that God is working through the impossible from a human perspective. As Joseph recognized the power of God, he recognized that his dreams, interpretation of dreams, are from God. But these happenings here were preparing Joseph for more responsibility. Let's go over to chapter 41, verses 15 and 16. We also notice that Joseph is now called to interpret Pharaoh's dream. because of his past faithfulness. Verse 15, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Now, I'd just like to wrap it up a little bit with this point. Had Joseph been moping around in self-pity and discouragement, it is unlikely that he would have interpreted the prisoner's dreams. And even though he was forgotten for a time, he was now called to Pharaoh to interpret this dream due to the testimony of his past faithfulness. And this is an important link because it was the interpretation of this dream that turned Joseph from a prisoner to an officer. And the dream that Joseph revealed was warning of famine, to which Pharaoh gave Joseph responsibility to oversee the gathering of food. Now notice the honor that came to Joseph because of his faithfulness. Let's read verses 38 through 45 from chapter 41. Verse 38, and Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such an one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, For as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Saphnath-Phineah, and he gave him to wife Athnah, the daughter of Potipherah, priest of On. And Joseph went over all the land of Egypt. Notice the honor coming through. Well, this was a turning point in Joseph's life. From this time on, Joseph's troubles seemed to be minimum because he was brought to power at God's perfect timing. Instead of Joseph getting the bad end of the deal, he is now the savior for others. And verses 50 and 52 describe the change when he named his children after being given a wife from Pharaoh. And unto Joseph was born two sons before the years of the famine came, which Athnath, the daughter of Potipherah, priest of On, bare to him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, he hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of affliction. Well, I like to keep looking at how Joseph was a blessing to others. 41 and verse 49, we see here Joseph being industrious. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea very much until he left numbering. It was without number, for it was without number. See the amount of food he gathered, and he was preparing to be a blessing. Notice the honor in verses 56 and 57. And the famine was over all the face of the earth. And Joseph opened up all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And all the countries came into Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn, because the famine was sore in all the lands. And we see here that everybody was now coming to Joseph for help. Well, let's go on to Genesis chapter 42. We see here that Joseph's family needed to buy food, and they came to buy from Joseph. And just in short, Joseph gave them food, but he did not reveal his brother's identity. And so in this, his brothers had bowed down to him, even though they were angry at him from his childhood. And also during this time, Joseph tested his brothers to see their level of sincerity. And the tide is changing. The brothers used to be in control of Joseph. And now Joseph is turning around and caring for his family. It was through Joseph that his family could have food. And also, his brothers' sins were brought to light to free them from the bondage they had carried for many years. Well, let's keep moving here. Genesis chapter 45. We notice here that Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. He sends for his father and family so he could take care of them. And notice the testimony. Notice Joseph's testimony to his brothers in verses 4 through 8. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "Come near to me, I pray you." And they came near, and he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall neither be earing or harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and a lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout the land of Egypt." And later on, we read in chapter 47 and verse 27, we read that Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein and grew and multiplied exceedingly. Notice the blessing coming out through Joseph. Well, we notice here also in chapter 47, from 14 through 26, Joseph is a good businessman, and he made sure the people were fed. At the same time, he held them responsible to pay up. He didn't just train them to take handouts. Until it was all said and done, the Egyptian people were happy because he had saved their lives, but also Joseph had practically gained all of Egypt's money, cattle, and land. Notice the honor. In time, Joseph's faithfulness brought him to great honor. Well, moving on to chapter 48, Joseph's sons received the blessing, and I believe it was in part because of Joseph's faithfulness, at least in part. Well, moving on to Genesis chapter 50, we see here that Joseph forgives his brothers, recognizes God's hand in his life, and promises to care for them. Notice the choices that Joseph made and where it took him.